So, welcome everybody. Welcome to the second session on the last day before the last day at TechEd EMEA 2014. My name is Mario Spusta. I'm working as a program manager in a corporate department which is called Technical Evangelism and Development. In that group, I'm working in a subgroup that works with global software vendors across the world. And we primarily help them with enabling their software as a service solutions and products on Microsoft Azure as a public cloud platform. So today, this session is all about hybrid cloud. I've seen in the agenda there have been some sessions about hybrid cloud. So before we dig into, just curious, who did attend one of the other sessions of that were about hybrid? So I'd say 30% approximately. So this session might be a little bit different because many of the hybrid sessions are really focused towards infrastructure like Azure Pack and site-to-site VPN, ExpressRoute, and these kind of technologies. This session has two main targets. Target number one, hybrid cloud cannot just implement it with plain infrastructure-driven approaches. There are alternative approaches, and this session is here to show you those alternative approaches based on real-world examples from projects that I have been working on over the course of the past 3 to 4 years with global software vendors. Second, this session is really targeted towards showing you a broad variety of options that you have so that you leave this session with a complete end-to-end big picture in terms of options that you have for implementing hybrid cloud solutions and also what their usage scenarios and advantages as well as disadvantages are. So that's what we are going to talk about in this session. So don't expect system center and things like this. Expect rather code samples. Sometimes in between. Cool. With that having said, let's start a little smart conversation around hybrid cloud. Hybrid cloud is one of these topics that is hyped as many of these other terms in our industry as well. I remember the good old SOA days. Everyone was talking about it. Everyone understood something different about it. So I think it's kind of the risk is similar for these terms like hybrid cloud. So I want to just set the stage and give you or start off with giving you a brief understanding of what and how I do think about hybrid cloud. And that's what we're talking about in the first section of this session, which is going to be the shortest one. So when we look at today's world, we see kind of two extremes. Like you have this one extreme where you run everything in your own data center, or whether it's a true private cloud with a high level of automation, or whether it's just virtual machines and virtualization with whatever virtualization technology you're using, doesn't matter for this session. It's just on-premises, you run everything in your own data center, you do all by yourself. And then there is this other extreme, which is the public cloud, where you run your stuff somewhere in an arbitrary, unknown data center somewhere in the world, in one of these mega data centers that, for example, Microsoft runs for Microsoft Azure in Europe, for example, in Dublin or in Amsterdam. And hybrid cloud is really all about building solutions, in my opinion, and applications. I'm really having the software vendor, the ISV view on these topics that run across those two environments. But from the end user's perspective, that the fact that it's running across two environments is completely transparent. So think of it like you have a solution which kind of looks like this, and you have an end user, and he's using that solution through defined interfaces. And then you have building blocks, and whatever these building blocks are, it doesn't matter for me, whether it's virtual machines, whether it's a service, whether it's a directory, it doesn't matter, right? Some of those building blocks are running in your own data center, and some of those building blocks are running in the public cloud, and then you integrate them somehow to form this complete end-to-end solution, your product at the end of the day, or your service, as we would say in this modern world. And that's what, in my opinion, hybrid cloud is all about and should be all about. It's not just infrastructure extensions. But of course, infrastructure extensions is one of the common scenarios that we see in hybrid cloud. The other scenarios that I have seen across global partners are things like distributed data processing, where for example, an ISV that one of my friends in Switzerland is working with leverages the public cloud and HD Insight and machine learning to run some analytics processes there. But at the same time, they have their Hadoop cluster running in their own data center on Linux, and they run analysis algorithms across those two worlds. So that's kind of more data-oriented hybrid cloud, how I would classify it. Then we have another ISV that I have been working with, who is a true global ISV with subsidiaries in Switzerland, Turkey, and so on and so forth. They are running a SaaS solution in the public cloud, but for some reason they need to run parts of their solution in the data centers of their customers as services, really as web APIs or web services, and that's more an hybrid cloud integration approach at a service level or an application level. And then finally, there are some, I call them subject-specific approaches to hybrid cloud. For example, high-performance computing burst loading into the cloud. Who did work with HPC in the past? So, three. So you might know the Windows Server HPC pack, and that has, for example, options to leverage compute nodes in the cloud, in Microsoft Azure, in addition to the HPC compute nodes that you have running on-premise. And that's, for me, a technology-specific approach at the end of the day towards hybrid cloud. So these are kind of the typical scenarios that I'm going to touch base in my session, also with practical real-world examples. So, of course, when you look at this, one question before we jump into, the technical details, when you look at this picture, one thing comes up for sure, right? If I would be standing here and tell you hybrid cloud makes your life easier, I think you should kick me out of the room and say, go home, marketing guy, because it does not. In reality, the opposite is the case. Hybrid cloud makes things a little bit more tricky and more complex. So you really should think about whether you want to go down that path or not. But the other view on it is I think you really should think about it. Let's speak about a common scenario. That partner that I've been working with across Switzerland and Turkey, they are in the human resources field. And you can imagine if you build human resources software for large enterprises, it might deal with sensitive data. Yeah? So like social security numbers and things like that about your employees, bonus payouts of high-level managers, something where these guys really get some bad feelings if they move them to the public cloud. But the ISV really wanted to leverage the elasticity as well as the pay-as-you-go characteristics of the public cloud because they really have seen benefits of using these things to A, save money, and B, make them more agile in terms of onboarding new customers at a faster pace. So in the traditional kind of thinking, where most of us are still, I would say, to a large extent, we would have said, okay, we have HR software. Oh, there's some sensitive data in it. Okay, forget about the public cloud. Let's buy a new data center, build a new data center, and operate our stuff there and spend a couple of millions on that. Before you go down that path, hybrid cloud gives you at least an additional option to evaluate. It doesn't mean that it is the silver bullet for you. It might very well be that you do an evaluation and you find out, well, I still need to go the more expensive path, but you should evaluate the options that you have before you go the more expensive path and see if hybrid cloud is an option for you. And I'm going to show you some of the options that might work for you as part of this presentation. So with that, let's get into the technical part just breathe a little bit because it's getting more complex, more technical now. So, but not as complex as maybe it might look like here. So, okay. So let's dig into a couple of scenarios. And each of the scenarios that I'm touching on covers one real-world scenario that I've been working with one of my ISVs on, and it relates back to these four approaches that I have shown in the previous section. That was infrastructure extension, the second one was distributed data processing and analytics, the third one was services integration, and the fourth one was technology-specific approaches. Okay, let's start with the simplest one, which is, in my opinion, still infrastructure extension. Again, I'm coming back to this partner who was building this human resources software service. What they really wanted to do is run as much as possible in Azure Platform as a Service. Why? Because that delivers the highest level of operations efficiency for them. They don't need to manage virtual machines. They don't need to take care about patch management. They don't need to take care about high availability and load balances because Azure is doing that for them. And they really wanted to embrace that because they wanted to be really fast in onboarding new customers. But nevertheless, their customer base were companies like Orange, Turkcell, British Telecom, so really big companies. So if they employ or deploy new human resources software, the probability is pretty high that these companies want to have their own extensive reporting about data on their employees, like performance ratings, cash payouts, bonus payouts, which, to be honest, the ISV A did not want to build. And B, with Azure SQL Database at the time when we started, that was two and a half years ago, it really was not possible to do this kind of extensive reporting. And also there is no analytics platform as a service offering in Azure that is comparable to SQL Server online analytics processing, SQL Server OLAP. And that is what most of their customers wanted to do. So what did we do in the architecture? Well, we deployed virtual machines with SQL Server analysis services in Azure Virtual Machines. So that's the obvious part of the thing. But since the whole piece should be a multi-tenant solution, what that partner is doing, whenever they onboard a new tenant, they create a new virtual network. In that virtual network, they deploy between one and four machines, which are running SQL Server analysis services, reporting services, and integration services. And that virtual network in Azure has the ability to connect through site-to-site VPN back to an on-premises network. So every customer which they are onboarding gets his own VNet, his own site-to-site VPN connection, and that enables the customer to really use OLAP and SQL analysis services and reporting services as it would run in their own data center. So there is no difference. They integrate those servers in their own Active Directory domain, in their own security model, and they manage the cubes by themselves. And the ISV just provisions the virtual machines for them with pre-installed software and forwards the billing in that case. So that is a really cool example of infrastructure extension. Another cool example that I would like to highlight without a sketch is something that we are seeing a lot with startups. Where new companies are starting, and of course, if they are development-oriented, for example, they would need to have their own IT infrastructure, like a directory, some file shares, and some servers where they do some stuff, like time tracking, blah, blah, blah. Many of them are building their own time tracking solution and things like that, right? So what many of these little companies are doing is, and that's another sort of infrastructure extension, is they, instead of buying their own rack with their own servers, they just spin up virtual machines in Azure, and they do a point-to-site VPN connection from their laptops. So their employees get laptops. Every laptop gets configured with a point-to-site connectivity to an Azure virtual network, and then with that way they use centralized test database instances, centralized test SharePoint servers, or whatever infrastructure they need just out of Azure. And that's something I would like to show to ease up things a little bit and give you some breath to think about these scenarios in action. So I keep the sketches since we might need them later on. So when you go to the Azure Management Portal, and when you go down to virtual networks, which we find here, and I'm zooming in, you'll see that I have one virtual network running here. And this is indeed a network when you look at the dashboard that I've set up for another customer project where we are prototyping a little bit some hybrid scenarios with HPC compute clusters. So in that virtual network, I have one domain controller, one head node, and three compute nodes of an HPC compute cluster. And what is really convenient is when I want to manage that guy, one thing I don't want to do is add public endpoints on the Azure load balancer for RDP, because that's a security, well, it might be a security risk, or it gives someone an additional attack surface. So what we did here is disabled all of the external endpoints on the load balancer and just remained them open for one website that allows us to schedule jobs through a web API into the HPC cluster. So still, I need to manage those guys. So what I did is, for this setup, I did set up point-to-site VPN, so in virtual network here, by activating the option, giving the gateway a subnet address where the VPN gateway sits that Azure provisions for this setup. And then there are some other subnets, which if you've heard the announcements in the keynote on Tuesday, which you can use to separate your network out into multiple subnets with different access control permissions and things like that. So that's all what you can do with virtual networks. And after you have done that, what you need to do is you need to create a certificate and upload a certificate which is used for authentication against the VPN gateway. I just used the self-signed certificate in this case that I created with MakeCert. And after you have done that, what you can do is download the VPN client through the dashboard. So here, which is something I've done already. So before I VPN in, just open up a RDP session to a server that you can see here. It's called hpcdc.hpc.local. Of course, you cannot find it. But when I go to my network connection and connect to this point-to-site VPN, which is the Azure, it still says Windows Azure. It's Microsoft Azure, of course. So all of these naming stuff. So now I can connect to that server. I skipped that. I mean, I think you got the point. The demo was just to slow down a little bit and make things a little bit easier. And easygoing. I stop that VPN connection now. That's probably something that you have seen in one of the other sessions. And since this is an architecture session, I wanted to cover it for the sake of completeness at the end of the day. So that's an example or two real-world examples of infrastructure extensions as you can do them with Azure. Let's switch gears a little bit. Advantages and disadvantages of that are pretty obvious in my case. I think the biggest advantage is that you don't need to do anything from a development perspective. It's just infrastructure that you set up. But for me, that's at the same time one of the biggest disadvantages, because for especially in big companies, you need to get back to IT and set up VPN routers and wait for weeks till they are set up. And no, it's not like that, right? That all goes faster. So let's switch gears a little bit to another scenario, which is more or less distributed data processing. And here I have two scenarios I would like to touch base on and talk a little bit about. One is a very simple one. Long time ago, I think three or four years ago, I was working with an ISV in my home country, Austria, where they wanted to create some sort of a mobile backend service, which today they would build with mobile services. At that time, that wasn't still available. As a backend for mobile clients like tablets, smartphones, and things like that. Of course, they wanted to do that all in the cloud because then it's always available. And that was kind of an extension to a CRM, to Microsoft Dynamics CRM, which their customers will operate on premises locally in their data center. Of course, that mobile service would use an Azure SQL database in that scenario. And since the mobile apps were supposed to use some data of the on-premises CRM system, that's one of the simple scenarios for data processing where you just say you sync data between those environments at the end of the day. Sync, yeah, a subset of the data. Now, who knows about Azure SQL Data Sync? No one. So that's good. Just keep it like this. It's a service that we introduced a couple of years ago. It's still in preview. It's a service that is supposed to provide you sync for a database as a service. The problem with that service is that, and frankly, I know the session is recorded, so I need to be careful what I'm saying. I've never seen that working in practice, not because the service is not good, but because of the limitations the service imposes on sync scenarios, automatic sync scenarios. So let me demonstrate that with another question. Who has auto-increment values in your databases, like int identifier that are automatic? Almost everyone, right? So the good thing is with these automated sync things, these things just don't work because it will generate new identifiers and then things are clashing up if you want to synchronize things back. So what we have done in this case is at that time there was a new feature announced which was the option and possibility to link Azure SQL database servers which are sitting in Azure to an on-premise SQL server instance as a linked server. Who knows about that option? 2, 3, 4, good. So I'm showing something new. So that's what we did indeed. We linked this server here. Linked this server on-premise in the SQL server, and we added some stored procedures in their CRM database, which pushed some of the data out when data got updated and inserted into the Azure SQL database. And with that, we had a pretty good level of control on how things get synchronized, how values get preserved, and things like that. And we didn't have to stick to data type limitations and things of like that of the service. Just to show you how it works, I've prepared a little script. We are not going to execute it, but just to give you an impression. That's the SQL Server at linked server command. It's nothing special. It's something that sits in SQL Server forever, I think, since I know SQL Server, I know linked servers. The point here is that it just points to a Azure SQL database in the cloud. That's the mapped name, how the server is called locally, the alias if you want so. The thing that you need to use here is just the in the add sync linked server login, you need to create a link, a login in the Azure SQL database that is used for connecting back to the Azure SQL database in the cloud. And that's pretty much it. And then you can do things like queries like this, shift, alt, enter, select star from linked server dot database name dot schema name dot entities. And it really works like this. The only thing that you need to know is it just works into one direction. So you only can link an Azure SQL database to an on-premise database, but you cannot link an on-premise database to an Azure SQL database. So that's good for pushing data out. It's maybe not so good for pushing data back into your on-premises network. And if you want to do that, my recommendation would still be, and I know we don't like that, but it's just a reality, that you will need to make your hands dirty and develop something based on whatever sync framework or on your own thing. Since there is nothing that is GA out there and in a stable state that does that for you. Which brings me to the next scenario, which is a more advanced scenario and which kind of is more realistic since it's a little bit more complex. So think of a car manufacturer which I'm not allowed to mention here on stage, who wants to do some analytics that relates car models, like the fast whatever. I'm not allowed to mention a brand. So fast cars, small cars, and they want to do some analytics, like how often are fast cars brought to the repair stations? How often are smaller cars brought to the repair stations? How about parts in the cars? Do they fail more often from one specific vendor as compared to another vendor? How is the history about that? How did that change over the last 5 years? And what that car manufacturer did is they did set up a small Hadoop cluster on Linux machines in their own data center to run some analytics. But what they learned quickly is that whenever a car comes back to the repair station, it gets connected to the computer system, it pulls off data. That happens for longer than we think it happens. So they know a lot about our cars at the end of the day. And they have tons of terabytes of data. So what they quickly learned is, if we really want to do serious analytics, we don't need 20 machines, we need 150 to 200 machines, which suddenly means that that car manufacturer, in addition to a car manufacturer, becomes a data center operations company. And that's what they didn't want. Second, they wanted to use smart algorithms, aka machine learning, to understand and analyze how trends are changing based on really smart models. And that's why they wanted to use Azure Machine Learning. The caveat with Azure Machine Learning, nevertheless, is the data must sit in Azure so that I'm able to use Azure Machine Learning. So the problem, nevertheless, is if the car manufacturer puts things like vehicle numbers into the public cloud, that's against the law of the country where they have their headquarters in. So they cannot do that. So what they did is, since they had a local Hadoop cluster already, which they wanted to use, they ran Hadoop jobs on top of the data which they grabbed from the cars. They anonymized attributes of the data sets, like, for example, the vehicle number. Nobody is doing analytics on pieces of the vehicle number. They rather use the vehicle number as a whole, like count how many vehicles of that number or how many repairs of that number did happen over the course of the past years. For that, I don't need the real vehicle number in the public cloud. So what they did is they developed a Hadoop job, a MapReduce job, which starts importing the data, anonymizing the vehicle numbers, storing the vehicle numbers in a local database, replacing it with an anonymous arbitrary value. Then they have written a second Hadoop job to push that data out into Azure tables. From there, they spin up HD Insight in Azure, as well as machine learning algorithms to analyze the data. When that analysis across hundreds of nodes, when that analysis is done, they load back the data into their own data center and create some fancy reports for their management. And that's a really cool approach. Unfortunately, there is nothing that I can give you in your hands that does that for you, but I wanted to highlight it because it's a really cool integration story of local Hadoop with HD Insight, which is Hadoop in Azure, and Azure Machine Learning, which is also a hybrid cloud setup at the end of the day. And that's thanks to my colleague Beat Schwegler from Switzerland, who is working on that. So that's another scenario that I think is very typical for a data-driven scenario. Looking at those two scenarios, I think they couldn't be more different. So it's really like when I look at the linked server, you don't need to do a lot. You just write a couple of triggers and store procedures. So it's very easy. When I look at the other approach, how should I say? It's not something that you do with a couple of clicks, like the typical Microsoft wizard. Next, 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 finish, done. That's not the case. So depending on your scenario, the advantage is either you don't have to do a lot of development or you have to do serious amount of development if you go down that path. So it's really up to you to evaluate whether the business value of that really counts. For this car manufacturer, it really made sense because they didn't want to become a data center operator. Whether hosted or not doesn't matter. They would have been required to manage that infrastructure and they didn't want to do so. They wanted to focus on car stuff. And that's really a cool example in my opinion. What really I think is one of the key advantages of the data-driven approaches is that it does not really affect the rest of your application tiers, like the business logic, business component, services, and things like that. It's really scoped. It's really scoped, and you can treat it as an island if you want. So also that second case that I've been showing, that's kind of an isolated thing separated from the rest of the application. And that's typically very easy with these data-driven approaches, at least based on the scenarios that I've seen so far. Cool. With that, we are coming to the next scenario. which is service integration across on-premise and the cloud. And there we have two, I would say, primary options. One option, which is more geared towards request response-like scenarios, where your service needs to get an, or application needs to get an immediate response of the other service that you're using that sits on-premise. And the other one is asynchronous, where you could leverage things like message queues. And we want to touch on both of them. So let's touch on the first scenario. Business use case, I'm jumping back again to this human resources company, which is building this performance management for employees of large enterprises. So everyone remembers that from this OLAP infrastructure extension scenario at the beginning, I guess. So one additional requirement that some of their customers had was the following. They forced this ISV, this software vendor, the service provider at the end of the day, to encrypt data, certain data sets, in the cloud without having the ability in the application to decrypt the data if someone gets access just to the cloud system. So like, for example, social security numbers, they were forced by two or three of their customers to encrypt those in the cloud, but manage the decryption and the private keys that are required for the decryption on-premise. What this means is the setup looks similar to what we have here. We have one key management and encryption service that runs on-premise here on the right-hand side, and we have the rest of the application that runs in the public cloud on the left-hand side. So now you could say, well, that's easy. They just provide that service as a web service, for example, install it in the data center of the customer, go to the IT department of the customer, ask them to configure public IP addresses, which in IPv4 are pretty limited these days, configure network address translations, configure firewall ports, and all these kind of things. And then after 8 months or so, we are deployed, right? Sounds very agile. That's not what they wanted to do. What they really wanted to provide is the option to install an agent that does the following. It connects from inside out the corporate network to what we call a relay bus. In Azure, that's the service bus relay, and stay or keep the connection to this relay open. And whenever a cloud application requires to decrypt some content, it goes to this service bus, queries for that service in a private service registry. We call that service bus namespace. And if that service is available, service bus bridges the connection. And the call flows through this relay. Question, who knows TeamViewer? Come on. Almost everyone knows TeamViewer. TeamViewer is doing exactly the same thing, just for remote desktop. So think of this as TeamViewer for web services. And that's a component, the service bus relay is a component that we run for you in Azure. Now, of course, someone could say, blah, they are bypassing our firewall. That's insecure. I think it's even more secure for several reasons. First, in this picture, you have three layers of authentication. First, the cloud needs to authenticate against the service bus. Second, the on-premise service needs to authenticate against the service bus. And then, of course, the authentication that you have in the service by itself, which could be, for example, a message credential in a SOAP message, is still valid because it's all relayed through the service bus relay. So you have this third level of authentication. Whoops. So another reason why I think this is more secure than infrastructure-driven approaches is because your application logic can control the semantics of the connectivity. This is super, super interesting. Imagine a scenario where you really want to limit the time window in which people can access your on-premises resources. With this architecture, what you do is you just stop the service on-premise, this encryption service. And when you stop it, it's not connected to service bus relay, so nobody will be able to call it. As simple as that. And that's why I think it's a cool architecture, and that's what I think we as architects should think about. Pragmatic, cool, simple solutions that solve the problem. And I have another customer that has exactly that requirement. And yeah, therefore I thought it makes sense to show a little demo at this point in time. So, scenario. What I have running in Azure websites here is a little website which we call MSZ Build Hybrid Demo. It's integrated with Azure Active Directory, but that's a different story. So I need to enter some credentials. To type them really fast, I'm using KeePass. Ah, magic! So that's my employee management portal. So I'm simulating this HR scenario that I've been talking through a large section of the session. So you see departments here, you see employees here, and then when you click on the employees, you see employees with cool social security numbers like this. So you could say, well, this guy's from Austria, maybe they have such strange social security numbers, right? Perfectly valid and possible, but it's indeed not the case. So that is an encrypted value that sits in the Azure SQL database. So when we look at the Azure SQL database here, that's the database that I'm running. And when I hit a 5 here on that query, what we'll see is that in these employees, these values are encrypted. So and that exactly simulates this encryption-decryption service that that I've been talking about before. So when I click on details here, what happens is, boom, we get an exception. Well, I don't allow you now to decrypt social security numbers, therefore I have stopped the service. So let's start the service, go back, and start the service here in my cool little solution. I have a little app, which is this crypto service app, which essentially hosts a crypto service, WCF web service. So it's a decryption service here, and that decryption service, when we look at it, has a decrypt content method which gets a crypto request with a key identifier and the content. So this here runs on my local machine. It runs a local SQL server which stores RSA public and private keys and key identifiers in my local database. So the cloud application needs to go to my on-premise service to decrypt the content. It gets the decrypted content through SSL back, and it sends it to the end user. Now you could say, well, but then it's decrypted in the memory of that compute machine. And the answer to that is also pragmatic. Many legal regulations say it's not a problem if data is sensitive data is decrypted for a very short period of time in memory in a compute instance in the cloud, because no one will be able to find that specific compute instance in a data center with 100K machines. Until we erase that memory. So what they do is they decrypt the content, get the decrypted content back, send it to the client application, and then they garbage collect the memory and things are gone. So it's a pragmatic approach at the end of the day. So when I start this decryption service, what it indeed does is it connects up to Service Bus Relay. It starts the decryption service, it starts the key management service, and now when I go back to my cool app here and hit Control F5, what we'll see, hopefully, is on the left-hand side, my decryption service gets called, and my application shows the social security number. Now, the performance of this is pretty nice. I mean, I'm at the conference network. We know that's not really fast, is it? Or who thinks the Wi-Fi is fast? Wow. And the other cool thing is the website runs in West US. I accidentally did set it up in West US and not in Europe. So that was fine performance-wise. Of course, I don't say that works for all and every scenario. It's an option for you that you can look at. Yeah. It definitely does not work if you need to decrypt gigabytes of data through a service bus relay and web service call. That's not the scenario. The scenario is more about when you think about business messages like orders, payment messages, credit card numbers. For this, that is a really good scenario and option that you can leverage. So, and for those of you who want to dig a little bit deeper, I'm looking at the time. We still have plenty of time, so we also can take a look at the code. So the service is essentially just a WCF service. So I have a service contract, an operation contract, nothing special in there. What is then special when it comes to service bus relay is the way how we instantiate the service. So when we look at the main application that hosts that service, I have a configuration option in my app.config that says whether I want to use service bus relay or not. With that, I also can run this beast on-premise without Azure, which is also valuable, I think. When it runs on Service Bus, I just create a different endpoint URL, and I'm using a class which is part of the Azure SDK for doing so. And if I just run on-premise, I just read the HTTP localhost WAC 9000 something WAC decryption service out of my app.config. Yeah. So that's one difference. The URL is different. The second difference is when I look at the service host, I'm using different bindings. So instead of using the normal WCF bindings, I'm using relay bindings, which do this plumbing work of connecting inside out to service bus, keeping the connection open, and if the connection fails, retry to open up the connection, and then keeps it up again. That's all encapsulated in those bindings and behaviors. And then there is a behavior that sends the authentication credentials to authenticate against the service bus registry, which I've created in the cloud. So those credentials, you get them when you create the new service bus namespace in the Azure Management Portal. So that's one option in the world of relay-based service communication. Of course, I need to talk about another option, which is based on this, which is a little bit more flexible and involves less development effort, and that is BizTalk Hybrid Connections. So what you have seen now with Service Bus Relay, unfortunately, works only for WCF and SOAP-based web services. It works also with web APIs, but they need to be based on WCF. If you want to have a more generic approach, you can use BizTalk Hybrid Connections, which is more or less a turnkey solution. So what does turnkey mean? Next, finish, done, in theory. Yeah. And the cool thing is BizTalk Hybrid Connections is based on Service Bus. So they built it on top of Azure Service Bus Relay. So how does it work? Essentially, it works in a way where you create a BizTalk hybrid connection in the cloud through the management portal. And then that gives you the option to download an agent, and that downloaded agent connects from inside out to the hybrid connection manager that sits in Azure and maps resources, and that's cool, any type of TCP or UDP-based resources that you have on-premises, through that hybrid connection and makes it available to Azure websites and mobile services. So that allows you, for example, to do things like having a website sitting in the cloud that sometimes calls a SQL server that runs in your own data center on-premises. Just let me show you where you find this and a little gotcha which we have, because this service, so there are two limitations. First, this service is still in preview, so we are still working on stabilizing it. Second, it today works only for websites and mobile services on the cloud side of the house. So you cannot use it with web worker roles or virtual machines at the moment. So let's look at this beast and go to the Azure Management Portal again. So in the portal, when you scroll a little bit through this super long list and look exactly, and I'm not finding it, here it is. So here you have BizTalk services. I've spinned up a BizTalk service already. I mean, that's not rocket science, right? You select the edition. The only thing that I would like to mention here is, and yeah, that's cool, huh? Thank you for showing me this. Okay, so forget about the Zoom here. So the only thing that I wanted to show here is Bistock Hybrid Connections is available in the free tier already. So up to, I think, 5 connections or so are for free, and you can just use it. So, and I've created that because that takes a while, and then you have this hybrid connections option here. So, and here you can create a hybrid connection, so I do this now. Important, and that's the reason why I'm showing this. The host name that you are entering here, so let me give a name, MySQL Server, so that's any name. The host name that you're entering here is the host name that runs the service in your own data center, which you want to make available to the public cloud, to Azure websites or mobile services through this private Bistock hybrid connection. So my data center here, my data center, is called MSZ S Pro, so that's the machine. And let's say I want to share SQL Server, so I have SQL Server running on premises, so I would say port 1433, and then it creates this hybrid connection for me. Well, cool, it's done already. It will show up in a second in the portal. It will show up after I refresh the portal. So sometimes we have to do this. And now I can do my on-premises setup. So that did set up the hybrid connection manager in the cloud. Now I need to set up the counterpart that runs in my own network. And after we see this hybrid connection here, after the portal did load again, blazing fast, it says, on-premises setup incomplete, so I need to do the setup. So now comes a gotcha, which will go away after we released. So there is a little bug in the setup procedure. Newtonsoft JSON 4.5, which they are relying on, which is a library for JSON processing in .NET, is missing in the current setup package. So if you run the setup, it will fail. That will go away, so they are working on a fix already. I had a conversation with Josh Twist, who owns that, 2 days ago, and they will push out a fix in a couple of days. If you want to try it today, what you need to do is you need to download JSON.NET 4.5, which I've done, and say a good old one, like gagutil install. I know that hurts. It's just temporary. It will go away. You install it, and then you say on-premises setup here, click the button, say install and configure, open, and now it installs that hybrid connection manager successfully on my machine. It's because they have a PowerShell script that automatically connects then the local connection manager through service bus relay to the setup. So now, in a second, we should see in the portal that it says, well, one instance is connected, which is my Surface Pro, which is connected. So how can I use that now? I can go back to my Azure website, for example, and I'm not doing that end-to-end, but I'm just showing it. I could go to the configuration and go to the connection strings and override my current connection string in the website after the page loaded. Come on. And do something like this. So where are my connection strings? Down, 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 down. So SQL Server new. I could do something like this. Data source equals MSZ S-Pro. S-Pro. Initial catalog equals my database. User ID equals your on-premise user name, and so on and so forth. And I could just do that in my website. I just need to tie the website to the hybrid connection, which is a click in the portal, but that works only in the new portal, in the preview portal, not in the existing one. And that's what Bistock hybrid connection brings you. So, Bistock hybrid connection, if you want so, is service bus relay as a turnkey solution. Cool, so that's another option that we have. This option has the same advantages and disadvantages as Relay. It really relies on a stable network connection, because you have seen if the on-premise service is not connected, your application in the cloud might fail and things like that. But it's really cool and easy and enables a bunch of additional scenarios to set up. So let's switch gears to a message-driven approach. And I stick with the same scenario, the HR human resources application. And now we are coming to the fun part of HR, which is bonus payouts. So that's the fun part for the employees, not for the HR department, I guess. But anyway, that's another story. So scenario that we, for example, inside of our own company have is that every employee gets on a regular basis some sort of bigger or smaller bonus payout, and that bonus payout is split into two pieces, a stock-based payout and a cash-based payout. Yeah? And for the stock-based payout, we usually work with brokers. And inside of Microsoft, for example, we work with two brokers, Smith Barney and Fidelity. And some employees are on Fidelity and others are on Smith Barney. So if there is a stock payout, in one scenario, Smith Barney needs to know about it. In the other one, Fidelity needs to know about it. And of course, then we have the cash payout, which runs through local tax offices. So we have the local tax offices and our on-premise office of the corporation. We have our brokers on the other side, and that's payout is a really cool scenario for reliable messaging. So I cannot lose a payment message, whether it's cash payout or something else. So for that, I would rather use a messaging-based approach as opposed to the service bus relay, which we have seen before. So let's assume in our HR software we generate the payout. What we do is we put it into a queue, and that queue is processed by a worker in the cloud, and the worker then applies some business rules and logic that defines which queue or which event is raised for which broker for the payout. So with that, I can have an end-to-end relationship between two premises connected through the cloud. And I also have an example for that with me. So let's play it through in theory. So the scenario that I'm talking about is the HR guy here is saying Mario gets a salary and a bonus. That is recorded in the local system. The local system says I need to have two payment messages, one payment message for the stock payout and one payment message for the cash payout. So that goes into some compute resources. These are optional, just to make the picture a little bit more fancy. And they then put those into further queues depending on the broker the employee is tied to, and that broker will listen on that other queue. So that's the scenario here. All the queuing stuff sits in the cloud. The rest sits on-premise in that scenario. And I've also brought that with me. So let's keep the ink here so that you can download that with the slides then. Let's go back to my HR application here in another fancy browser and say MSZ built hybrid. Now I need to enter my password again. I love passwords. So, and now I create a new employee. So I go to business evangelists, they are having Smith Barney as a broker in my sample here. I create a new employee which has a social security number 9999. This is how they look like in Austria. A, B, C, D, E, F, Tech. Oh no, let's call him Tech Ed. And let's say this guy gets a monthly salary of 3,000 euros, create. And now Tech Ed, oh yeah, I need to start my decryption service. Did you notice that for the encryption, I did not have to have the on-premise encryption service running, just a side note, because we cache the public keys in the application in the cloud for encrypting content. So anyway, now we are going to do some, for this Tech Ed guys, we are going to do a rating. So we say, great person, superb. And he gets a payout of 5,000 in cash and 8,000 in stock. Say create. So now I do again, I go on to this employee again. So I need to work on my user experience. The navigation is a little bit suboptimal, I'd say. And I say payout. So payout will decrypt the payment content through my encryption service, and then nothing happens, right? It didn't crash, although I don't have my on-premises services running, because it just put messages into the queue. This is more reliable than what we have seen before. So if I start my queue receivers for these different brokers now, let's say I'm doing so I have a broker adapter here. I start that two times, one time for Fidelity and one time for Smith Barney. So that simulates my on-premise broker. And then I have the tax office application, which also runs on-premise. So these are my three applications. Put one, two, three. So, and here I'm listening for Fidelity, enter. And here I'm listening for Smith Barney, enter. And here I'm listening for Fidelity, and Smith Barney. That's the tax office that needs to know about everything. And what you see here in yellow are the stock messages that have been set on the queue, one I tried yesterday. The payment messages which I've received from a service bus queue which sits in the cloud. So to make that a little bit more visual, I go to the portal and look here at service bus. I go to service bus, and in that hybrid cloud service bus, you'll see topics and subscriptions which are public subscribe event-based queues, one for my brokers and one for my salary messages. And that is where I put those messages into. And that's how my on-premise software received the payment message. And I could use the same public key to encrypt the message that I put on the queue and decrypt it on-premises to make that secure as well. What I wanted to show with this is that the queuing-based approach is more reliable, of course, but it's a little bit more complex, since you need to adopt or adjust your application architecture to something that supports these asynchronous queue-based architectures. Cool. So let's switch gears to the final topics. So these were the options that I wanted to show you. I hope they were interesting for you. But there are a couple of general questions that I often get asked when I talk about these options. And the first one is, does that really perform? And the answers are twofold. So first, of course, what I am here talking about are options. These options are here to be evaluated before you jump into them to see if they fulfill your requirements. I'm not talking about having silver bullets available. So that's one thing. And having that said, some messaging patterns might be better applicable for hybrid solutions, and others might not. And if they are not, then you might have to get back to the expensive option of doing all by yourself in your own data center. That's still something that can happen. On the other hand, we have seen that it performed pretty well even on this low bandwidth network. So I would suggest you just run and see if it fulfills a good messaging throughput for your case, and if it does, it's definitely an option. The other answer to that is a little bit more infrastructure-oriented. So we have, of course, services to push the performance a little bit. And one of the services that we need to mention here is ExpressRoute, which gives you the option to have direct fiber connections from your data center through your telco provider or through one of these internet backbone providers such as Level 3, Equinix and Co, or telco providers such as British Telecom, to get a more direct connectivity to Azure with guaranteed throughput because it's direct fiber. The throughput is between 256 megabit per second and 2 gigabit per second, guaranteed. And that's definitely an option to get more stable and reliable option performance. And then I have a third one. I don't have a slide for that. I'm working with a media company in UK. They have a 10 gig internet connectivity. For them, they shift terabytes of data back and forth between the public cloud and their own data center on a daily basis. So the third option is you invest in your own lines. So, okay, that's what I have to say about performance. The second question that I get asked very often is, oh, damn, that's more complex. How do I manage it? And also, there are two answers to that. So first, Azure provides all of its management libraries as public available HTTP REST endpoints. So you can build your own stuff to monitor your solutions, or you leverage one of the third-party solutions that are offered as a service already in the Azure marketplace, like New Relic or AppDynamics. Or if you want to have an end-to-end Microsoft solution, you definitely should look at System Center. So that's all I have to say about System Center. I hope you did not expect more about System Center. But it's definitely something that enables you to manage, monitor, and also operate such hybrid environments. And it especially can play its power if you have Azure Pack or Cloud Pack system on premises. Because then you really get a common unified management experience across your public and private cloud. The last thing, of course, that gets asked all the time is, how do I authenticate my users? And that would deserve a session on its own. And fortunately, there are many of those sessions here at Techademia about Azure Active Directory, which allows you to implement single sign-on as well as directory synchronization with your on-premises Active Directory. And with that, I think you also can bridge the gap. But there is a dedicated session on hybrid identity here at Teched, and I've listed that in the last part of the slide deck, in the resources and references section. So with that, we are at the end of this session. I hope I have shown you some of the options that we have with regards to hybrid cloud. For reference, I added a table with all of the options. I think I forgot to add BizTalk hybrid connection, so that's one thing that you would need to add to the technology-specific area, I'd say. This is what we built. We had this cloud HR website in the middle. We had our crypto service on-premise, which we connected through Service Bus Relay. We had our broker agents, as well as our financial services agents, which we connected through queues, Service Bus queues in that case. And we had Azure Active Directory integrated for the authentication. That is something that I didn't show because there is a separate session on that. Here are some resources I want to leave you with. Related content, and here is this building, where is it? Directory integration, creating one directory with AD and Azure AD. That's the session I've been referring to. I don't know if that will happen or happened already. If it happened already, look at the recording. So with that, I hope I'm here on stage for questions and answers. So with that, please fill out the evaluations. One comment to the evaluations. So if you really did like something or did not like something, it's more valuable for me if you write it in the comments, because then I can change something. If you just give the bad number, I don't know what to change. If you just give the good number, I don't know what I should continue to do. So really leverage the comments. And with that, thanks a lot for your attention. I hope it was interesting.